Who is the Martian Emperor? When a giant airship descends on New York City in 1892 and threatens destruction if the world does not submit to the Martian flag, it's up to the mysterious Smith, inventor and adventurer, to find out what forces are at work. To stop the menace, they'll need to enlist the help of Theodore Roosevelt and other early 20th century heroes. It's the second book in Andrew Mayne's The Chronological Man series, and the Martian Emperor combines mystery, airship battles, and backroom Tammany Hall politics, all against the backdrop of a world on the verge of war. You can buy it for only $1 at Amazon or Nook, coming soon to Apple iBooks. It's Andrew Mayne's The Chronological Man, The Martian Emperor, available now on ebook. This is a free audiobook presentation of The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist by Andrew Mayne, read by Justin Robert Young. If you would like to download the full ebook for only 99 cents, head on over to Amazon or Barnes & Noble's Nook store or Apple's iBooks. If you are enjoying this presentation, head on over to the Amazon listing for The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, and remember to leave a review. We appreciate it. Chapter 6. According to Miss Mary O'Mallory, she last saw her beau right about here. Smith pointed his umbrella toward the middle of the street. It was late afternoon, and the fog was beginning to thicken. Horse-drawn carriages and wagons rolled back and forth through the street carrying goods from the various factories and warehouses that lined both sides of the avenue. Most of them already had lanterns lit to help guide the way. People bustled along in soot-covered leather aprons or cotton and wool that were a dull gray. A few women were dressed in work linens, in the same bland color as the men. Almost none of the women wore hats. Most had their hair tied up in buns. No one seemed to notice Smith, although a few men turned to appraise April. "What stands out to you?" asked Smith, as he balanced on the edge of the sidewalk, twirling his umbrella. April looked at the street and buildings. There were a few alleyways beside the industrial look of the area, and the miasmatic fog that covered the entire city. Nothing stood out as sinister to her. She looked at the different buildings that lined the street. There was an abattoir, a machine tool manufacturer, a few warehouses with no markings. "He's either here or not here," said Smith.
"Yes, I'd say so," replied April, agreeing to nothing.
"Then that leaves four possibilities, I should say."
"Four?" asked April.
"One. All of these assume the account is accurate, of course. He left here of his own free will and is hiding elsewhere. Two, he's hiding somewhere here of his own choice. Three, he was taken from here against his will by some other agency. Or four, he's been hidden away somewhere against his will," said Smith. "What would you say to that, Miss Malone?"
"If he left here or is hiding here, then it doesn't seem like he'd be connected to all the other disappearances. If that's the case, then we should move on. If he was taken, then it would seem that he was moved on to somewhere else," replied April, her blue eyes scanning the street and buildings.
"Why do you say that?" Smith had an approving grin.
"The missing persons vanish from different parts of the city. Assuming this location is just as random, I'd assume that whomever is doing this is taking them somewhere else instead of fighting 17 nearby locations to each disappearance to hide the bodies." April bit her lip and looked up and down the street. An ice wagon rolled by, pulled by a team of horses. She brushed a lock of hair.
"What are you thinking?" asked Smith as he nodded to the ice wagon.
"They had to be taken away somehow. Maybe bodily for a few yards, but then I'd think they had to be carried away in a carriage or wagon." She shook her head. "No one reported or seeing hearing a carriage, but I suppose they might not have noticed one a half block away. You could miss a dark-colored wagon a few feet in front of your face in this fog." Smith began to walk along the gutter and poked his umbrella into the puddles. A black carriage. Like a hearse. That'd be how I'd do it. Well, Miss Malone, I think your method is sound for your own nefarious purposes. He pulled his umbrella out of the puddle and then looked at the opposite side of the street. What's this? Smith walked to the gutter and stabbed his umbrella into the dark shape. He lifted it up to eye level. It looks like a wooden cap. A bit soggy, but definitely a cap. He brought it over to April. Miss Malone, my olfactory senses are still a bit diminished. Would you do me the kindness of having a smell of this cap? April looked at the cap and then back at Smith. He smiled. Oh, dear. She leaned in and opened her nostrils. A little foul, I'd say. Foul? Please describe, Miss Malone. You know, foul, she said, wrinkling her small nose. I can think of 1,000 different kinds of foul smells. I can describe 12 different kinds of decaying flesh smells alone. Did you know that decomposing carnivores smell totally different than herbivores, and reptiles are different altogether? I once had to spend several days in the presence of the scent of a decomposing dragon corpse in the Komodo Islands. Nasty creatures in life and death, for the life of me. I can't recall the occasion for such bad company, but I digress. Could you be a little more specific? I don't know. It has an oily smell, like burned grease, she replied. Ah! Smith tucked the soggy hat into his pocket. That would be the smell from a whaling vessel, I'd assume. I believe the absent Mr. Carnegie worked on such a ship. Smith looked at the unmarked warehouses. I think your assessment is correct. We can find out who owns these buildings, and if we come up dry for now, I think that Mr. Carnegie is nowhere to be found in any of these premises. "Do you think a black carriage hauled him off in the night?" asked April. Smith pursed his lips. "Or some other alternative means of transportation?" He looked down at the three watches on his wrist. "I think we can check out one more location before we need to procure some lanterns." "Lanterns," thought April. She followed Smith as she walked down the street, tapping the metal tip of his umbrella on the paving stones and the side of the buildings. "It'd be fun to find a trap door or a hidden panel, wouldn't it?" April nodded, unsure if he was serious. "If they're not being kidnapped for ransom, then why take them away at all? Lots of reasons, I suppose, maybe to sell their body parts to medical schools." "That's rather gruesome," said April as she wrinkled her nose. "Is there much call for that?" "Not now, that I know of. I have to go back. Check the office, check the going price. Thinking about a different occupation, Miss Malone?" "I've got a few relatives I would consider offers on." Chapter 7. The shadows of the buildings had reached the other side of the street by the time they heard the sound of the woman screaming. Smith turned to April. "Beg your pardon." He broke out into a run toward the sound. April lifted the hem of her skirt and chased after him. 3 blocks later, she came around the corner and saw Smith talking to an older man in a leather apron. Both of them were out of breath and looked up as April approached them.
"You heard it too?"
said the man, turning to April. She pointed at Smith. "Yes, I came running after him." April looked at the street. It was completely empty. "Who shouted?"
"Devil if I know," said the man.
He gestured toward the open door of the carpentry shop.
"I was over there, planning when I heard the screaming. I came running out here and I ran into you."
He nodded to Smith. "Well, this is disturbing." Smith folded his arms and considered the street. "A missing person and not even a name to report." "Did you by chance hear a carriage go by?" April asked the carpenter.
"No, miss, not that I would have noticed."
He jerked a thumb toward a shop. Music was coming through the doors.
"I have my gramophone playing while I work. I don't pay attention to much else."
Smith scrutinized the sidewalk and the buildings. He poked his umbrella into a puddle on one side of the street, like he'd done in the past location. He looked up at the fading sun. "This one in daylight. This is the most disconcerting." He turned to the carpenter.
"Do you know the constable who patrols this neighborhood? Could you tell him what you saw, or rather what you didn't see when he comes by?"
The carpenter nodded.
"I will, for what it's worth."
Smith walked to the center of the street and took turns facing in every direction. He spent a considerable amount of time staring at the sky, which seemed odd to April. The carpenter returned to his shop. April went to stand beside Smith. "See anything?" she asked. "Not presently. It's like the person who screamed just vanished. Could have been a child, or someone having a prank." "It sounded like bloody murder," said April.
"Yes,
it did. Can you smell anything?" April was beginning to realize that her nose was going to play as big a part as her brain. She noticed a large chimney puffing out coal smoke. The wind was carrying it away swiftly. "There's a bit of a breeze," she pointed to the chimney. "I can definitely smell that." "Nothing else stands out."
"Nothing?"
April shook her head.
"Too bad. I think we should head back to the office. I want to take a closer look at the map.
Then maybe we go speak to Miss O'Mallory."
"Miss O'Mallory?" asked April.
"But she's in the sanatorium."
"And?" asked Smith.
"Nothing." April's mind went back to the scream they just heard. To Smith, it seemed like one more piece of information to add to the problem he was trying to solve. To her, it was the last sound someone had made. What if it had been her? She looked at the darkening streets and pulled her coat closer. Smith acted as if he was an observer to the events, not an actual participant. April thought of the number of times she'd walked home alone in the fading light. The last person had gone missing only a few blocks from where she stood. Strangely, she found Smith's obliviousness comforting. She'd rather be standing near him, trying to figure things out, than at home with her mother and sisters, wondering what was going on in the night. They began walking down the street when Smith grabbed April's elbow and pulled her closer to him.
"Mr. Smith?"
"Not now, Miss Malone," he said in a whispered tone. "I want you to yell at me and then storm off in front of us as fast as we can. Then go left at that corner."
"Well, I never!"
shouted April as she slapped him in the face and ran away from him down the street. Smith stood there, stunned, his face still stinging from her slap. He caught her movement at the corner of his eye and then chased after April. He reached the corner and then ducked around it. April was standing there with a mischievous grin on her face. He put a finger to his lips and rubbed his cheek. He kneeled down by the edge of the brick wall. Running footsteps grew louder. Smith stuck his umbrella hook side out at ankle height. A man ran past the edge as his foot tripped on the umbrella. He came crashing to the ground. Smith ran over to him and put a shoe at his back. He shoved the pointed end of his umbrella into his side. "Most sorry, but why are you following me?" His voice was polite but stern.
"I'm not following you, you chit. I was following Miss Malone."
"David!"
shouted April, recognizing the voice. Smith turned to her.
"You know this man?"
April nodded.
"He's in my drama class."
She walked up to help him. David gave Smith a glare as he brushed the dirt off his trousers and adjusted his coat and vest. He looked to be in his mid-20s and had handsome yet stern features.
"My apologies. I'm a bit concerned about my own security. I often have people making inquiries into my affairs," said Smith in a tone that was less than convincing.
"And why would that be?" asked David.
"Well, that would be my affair, wouldn't it? Care to tell us why you were following Miss Malone?" asked Smith with a sharp look.
"We were worried, that's all. Some of us in the drama class, with the fog and all."
"This is your first acting class?" asked Smith, his eyebrow arched.
"Yeah. Why do you ask?"
he replied. "Oh, no reason," said Smith. "So you saw us walking, and you decided to follow. Follow to make sure that she made it to class safely."
"Yeah, that's right. So who exactly are you?"
April interrupted.
"He's a friend of the family, David."
David gave Smith a wary look.
"I see. Will I be seeing you in class tonight?"
April looked over at Smith.
"I don't think so. We have some family business to attend to."
"Family business? I'll give your mother my best. I hope I'll be able to stop by again soon."
"Yes, that'd be lovely."
April gave him a polite nod and put her hand through Smith's elbow. "Have a lovely evening." She waited until they'd gotten two blocks down before she spoke.
"That was peculiar.
I'm going to guess that he's a very poor acting student, said Smith.
Dreadful. Some of us assumed he was just there to meet the ladies.
I'm sure he was there to meet one in particular, replied Smith.
Now, Smith, I don't mean it like that, but let me ask. Did he ask to call on you?
I'm not sure if that's any of your business, said April.
Perhaps it is. Did he ask you questions about your job or who you worked for?
Yes, but I think he was just making polite conversation in his own boorish way.
We'll see, replied Smith.
April had thought David's behavior a bit unusual, but so was Smith's. She still wasn't sure if she understood either of their intentions, let alone her own.
Chapter 8. They returned to the office at dusk. April went around the corner to pick up some sandwiches, while Smith vanished behind his metal door to retrieve some things. When she returned, he'd pinned a large map of Boston to the wall.
"Before we get into that matter," he said, as he pointed at the map, "I need to ask you something. When did you first meet that man, David?"
"Smith, I think that you're a pleasant fellow, and I'm obliged to follow you on all sorts of strange misadventures, as far as it falls within the somewhat nebulous job description, but my personal affairs are my own."
She'd known the man only a few hours, and she'd already taken on a form of familiarity with him, which she was unaccustomed to. Deep down, she liked it, but knew it wasn't proper to engage in it, at least not until an obvious manner.
"No offense is meant. I'm asking in a strictly professional capacity, Miss Malone. There's a great deal of secrets here, many of which it's very important that they don't fall into the wrong hands."
"I hardly think David is the wrong hands. A taxidermist from Rhode Island has very little use of whatever mysteries you think you possess," she said, recalling in her mind the most boring conversation about the difference between badger toes and raccoon feet.
"It's not the fool David I'm concerned about. It's who he's working for. There are very dangerous people trying to inquire about me and what it is I do. Just give me the date of the first time you met him, that's all, and I'll leave the matter alone."
"Fine," said April. "6 weeks ago, I met him at the drama class." She was more frustrated with the idea that David was some kind of spy than actually upset with Smith.
"He signed up after you?"
"Yes, why?" Smith reached into his pocket and pulled out a photograph.
"I have a number of security measures built into this building. I own the whole block, actually. Some of the nearby buildings as well. There's an automatic camera. It takes photographs whenever the sidewalk in front of here is walked upon. In the corner, you'll see a clock with the time and date superimposed on the image."
He handed the photograph to April. The photograph showed David peering into the window. The timestamp showed it was 6 months prior. April was confused. She felt her stomach roil.
"I have hundreds more of him. Some are more clear than others. It wasn't a chance occurrence. He seems unreasonably interested in my affairs. I apologize for the inconvenience."
April sat at her desk and looked at the photograph again. "He was a horrible actor. Handsome. Yeah, that was about it."
Smith sat on the edge of her desk.
"Miss Malone, I'm sure your qualities were not lost on him, certainly not on me." April waved a hand at the office.
"For 2 years, I've been coming in here and staring at an empty room. I finally decided to do something a little adventurous, take a drama class." She tossed a photograph onto the desk. "And the first man I meet who seems to fancy girls ends up being paid to spy on me. I am sorry for any harm this job has caused to your personal life."
April looked up at Smith.
"Who are you? All day long, while we've been chasing after whatever happened to these people, I keep wondering that about you."
Smith tapped the photograph.
"You can understand why I'm hesitant to offer up much about myself. The less you know, the less reason anyone will have to seek you out."
"Lot good that's done."
"True. I guess I can tell you a little. My amnesia is a little less severe. I have a better picture in my head of who I am and what all this means."
Smith walked over a row of books and pulled one out.
"How old would you say I was?"
He laid it open to a photograph.
Late 20s, early 30s, I'd guess. Smith pointed at the image. That's Abraham Lincoln, almost 30 years ago. Notice the man to his left? How old would you say he is? April leaned in to look at the photograph. It was Smith. That's you, she looked up. You look the same. She squinted her eyes to look more closely at Smith's face for any wrinkles. Very similar. Smith checked the watches on his wrist. According to my chronograph, it's only been a few weeks for me since that photograph was taken. She examined the binding to see if it had been pasted in as a joke, like the Wells story, The Chronic Argonauts. A time traveler, she said with a grin, not sure what to believe. She made light because she didn't know what else to say. Of course not. Don't be absurd. Time travel is impossible. At least, backwards is impossible. Smith rolled his eyes as if this were a question he was asked all the time. I have other means. You're not a vampire, are you? She looked over the metal door he'd emerged from that morning. A day ago, she would have thought that was a crazy idea. Now, she wasn't sure of anything. No, no, I don't believe so. You tell right away by the smell, Smith said, seriously. April arched her eyebrow. Pardon me? She'd meant the question in jest. What I am, who I am, isn't as important as what I'm trying to do, and that's stopping more people from going missing. And to do that, we need to be vigilant. I fear it's part of something far more sinister. He picked up the photograph of David and tossed it in the wastebasket. I'll deal with the Rhode Island taxidermist in due time. He walked over to the map on the wall and started pushing pins into locations. In the meantime, let's focus our attention on the current matter. I fear the attack we almost witnessed is evidence that things are about to get worse. He paused. Miss Malone, if you'd prefer, maybe it would be better if I had someone escort you home. I seem to have gotten caught up in things. He checked his chronograph. I've already asked too much of you. April got up from her chair and walked over to Smith. She took a handful of pushpins from him and began putting them into the missing person's locations from memory. I think you're going to need my help. She removed one of Smith's pins and put it in the correct position. Why, thank you, Miss Malone. He examined the pushpins. He stole a glance at her and smiled. Do you see a pattern forming? April took a step back. The pins appeared to be clustering on one area. Hold on. She pulled them all back out. Let's color code them by date. April pushed the pins back in using her own scheme. A pattern began to form. Smith walked over and sat down on his desk to take in the whole map. I say, Miss Malone, you are a clever girl. Her cheeks blushed. She'd been told 1,000 times how pretty she was. She couldn't remember, since she was a little girl, when a man called her clever as a compliment. The colored pushpins were arranged with one color representing a 3-day period. They began on the eastern side of South Boston and radiated to the west. April looked at the map more closely. She pointed to a street near the wharfs. It seems odd that there's none on the other side. Smith shook his head. Not at all. On the ocean side of that street, they'd be reported to the Harbor Authority. I'm sure they have their own collection of missing persons report. Only they care even less than the South Boston Department does, because a missing sailor is an hourly event. It's what I feared. How so? Smith waved a hand over the radiating pattern. That is not a random arrangement, he looked at April. That's a hunting pattern. A hunting pattern? Like an animal? Indeed. I don't think we're looking for a black carriage being driven by ghost horses. We're looking for some kind of creature. A creature? What kind of creature? I'd rather not guess right now, said Smith. We need to tell the police. Smith shook his head. Tell them what? That their phantom maniac is an indescribable animal? We need more proof. So now what? Asked April. Now we need to talk to Miss O'Mallory. He reached into his pocket
and pulled out two small vials. We need to find out which of these two smells is the most familiar to her.
Why not ask Miss Shelley?
I think Miss O'Mallory got a bigger whiff. We can ask Miss Shelley, too, if O'Mallory can't help us.
April nodded her head. I'm fairly sure that they won't let us in to see her at the women's hospital, especially at this hour.
That's why I have a plan, Miss Malone. One that uses your extensive knowledge of theatrical techniques.
He explained his plan to her.
April was dumbfounded.
I think that's the amnesia talking, Smith. That's the daftest thing I've ever heard.
You don't think I could pull it off?
He asked. Trust me, I'd like to see you dressed up like a tart and marched into the women's hospital. But it's a silly notion. Once they see you have the wrong tackle, they'll send you to the men's prison. I'm sure they'd love your fancy face paint get up there.
Do you have a better idea? Asked the dejected Smith.
When you mentioned my theater skills, I thought you meant acting.
He touched his hand to his cheek, where she had struck him.
Yes, there's that.
But I couldn't send you in there. It's too much to ask.
No, it's not. I live in this town. It could have been me screaming for help today. Besides, you have an escape plan, right?
One that doesn't involve me spending the entire night in the sanatorium.
Smith nodded.
Yes, of course.
Maybe.
This is a free audiobook presentation of The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, by Andrew May. Read by Justin Robert Young. If you would like to download the full ebook for only 99 cents, head on over to Amazon or Barnes & Noble's Nook Store or Apple's iBooks. If you are enjoying this presentation, head on over to the Amazon listing for The Chronological Man, The Monster in the Mist, and remember to leave a review. We appreciate it.